Welcome to Tucker Talks, where your host, Mel Tucker, goes all in. For music to moguls, culture to cuisine, and ball, ball, ball. And now, Renaissance man and overall good guy, Michigan State head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Welcome to Tucker Talks. I'm Mel Tucker, and we're talking via video chat with Robbie Gold. Robbie's the current 49ers place kicker, a former All-Pro, and most importantly, a Big Ten alum.
Robbie, what's up, Mel?
What's up? Good as gold. How you been, bro?
Everything's good. Just enjoying this family time. You know, obviously, nobody wants to be going through what we're going through, obviously, with the unprecedented times. And for me, it's been kind of unique to spend this time with my family, because three of the last 4 years, I've been on the road 7 months out of the year. So to watch my boys grow up and play baseball and go out and teach them how to ride a bike and things like that have been pretty special for me. And, you know, I'm thankful for everybody who's on the front line fighting a good fight and allowing me to be able to do what I do. So everything's great. How about you?
Hey, man, I can't complain. I'm just living the dream. You know me. I'm rolling with the punches. And, I mean, it's a crazy time, but we're going to grow through it, man. We're going to make it happen. You know, at some point, we'll be back, and we'll be rock and roll. I like your background, man. Are you a guitar guy?
I wish I could rip a guitar, you know. That would be unbelievable to me. But, no, so my guitars in the back, these are all guitars that I kind of collected. I'm in my office. Okay. So I have anybody from Toby Keith, Alice Cooper, Darius Rucker, Phil Mickelson, Brad Paisley, Maroon 5, REO Speedwagon, Plain White Tees. Yeah, so.
You're not playing around, bro. Like, how'd you get those?
Some through events, and then some through just meeting the guys here when they come through Chicago at some of the Alice Cooper I met at a golf outing. That was a lot of fun. That was for Steve Young. Brad Paisley is a good buddy of mine. I saw Darius when he came through Chicago. And then REO Speedwagon, those guys, they're a Chicago group. So I have a friend of mine who sent me that. But, yeah, I mean, I love collecting things. I collect helmets. I have all 32 helmets. I get autographs on those. I have every Super Bowl football. I'm trying to get all the MVPs on those, which is kind of cool. I got those through Wilson here, another Chicago-based company.
Sweet.
You know, it's funny. I went to the Pro Bowl in 06, my first full year in the league. Yeah. And I remember showing up there and I had nothing. And I was like, I'm with Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. I'm like, Robbie, what are you doing? You're going to go get a napkin from the pool bar and like go get autographed, right? So I always told myself that I would start a collection of things just to have and eventually pass it on to my kids. But just so I can tell people memories and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that's good, man. I see a piano back there too. Are you collect those, or are you actually like a pianist?
No, so my wife grew up playing the piano. My in-laws, they all of them played the piano. My kids are starting to learn how to play the piano. So, it was a gift for our wedding from our in-laws, and then
nice.
What's going to be unique is one of my goals is when I'm done playing football is I want to learn how to play that thing.
Really?
It's just collecting dust right now for me, but for my kids, they're learning how to play, and I think it's a really unique quality to have to build upon, right? So, you know, I always said, and I'm sure you're kind of the same way, you know, if my kids want to play sports, great.
Sure,
if they don't care, right? I think a lot of it for me is if they are very respectful, if they listen to people and they treat people the right way, then I'm doing something okay as a dad.
Yeah,
and I have a great wife too, so that kind of helps.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I tell my kids, like, as long as you're doing well in school, and like you say, you're a good person, good citizen, man. If you play ball or whatever, it's cool. If not, you know, I'm good with that. But the grades got to be tight.
No doubt.
They do a great job, so I can't complain. But, hey, I got some questions I want to ask you, man.
Okay, hit me with your best shot.
You're one of my favorite guys ever. I mean, just going back, I met you when I was coaching for the Bears. For some reason, I'm a defensive coordinator. You're a place kicker. We kind of hit it off. I don't know if it was like, because I was really cool with Joe D, and, you know, that type of deal. But I don't know. Is that like a normal relationship to be cool with the DC and you're the place kicker? Or?
Yeah, I love – here's what I enjoy. I enjoy football. Not necessarily position by position, but something I love is I love learning about the game of football. And there's a lot of situations for me that – will be predicated upon the defense and helping them with the punt game and or the offense and field goal kicking and kickoff. So
Right.
I think something that was really cool for me is I've been able to have some really great relationships with a lot of my coaches. And I think something that allowed me to gravitate towards you was just your family, your background of being a coach, your experience. Yeah, for sure, being close with Jody helped. But I think what I love the most is just being able to, listen, as a kicker, I have a lot of time on my hands. So I'm trying to find ways to kill. You guys are in between periods. I'm going to take every chance I can to kind of kick it with you guys. So, you know, it was awesome for me to be able to be able to pull from you from a lot of different things. And I always remember going to dinner and telling stories and having fun. And those are things for me that I hope that when people play sports and my kids do things, that they pull from those relationships.
Sure.
Because that's what I'm going to remember the most. So,
right.
I love having relationships with my coaches and players, but I think a lot of it came to me through just kind of your background and where you've been. And, now you're in the Big Ten coaching against my Nittany Lions. Take it easy on them this year.
Yeah,
you?
Right. We'll see, man. Speaking of Nittany Lions, coming out of Penn State as an undrafted free agent, how hard is it to break into the NFL as a kicker, undrafted? I mean, it's a relentless grind. I know it's got to be.
You know, I had a really good sophomore year. I came into my senior year really excited because I was kicking the ball great. We had a lot of holders, a lot of snappers, a lot of things that kind of were turning over. I actually played one of my best games that year against Michigan State. We always had played Michigan State last as our land grant trophy. And I know a couple weeks before that, I missed a chip shot field goal against Iowa. And I remember walking outside of the gates at Penn State and I said, Dad, I just don't know if football is like for me, you know, like,
what?
I just had such a tough senior year. You know, it was kind of draining. And my dad's like, listen, go try it. Just put everything you have into finishing your grades. You're getting a great business degree.
Right.
You can do whatever you want after that. You have a lot of things lined up, but just give it a shot. So here I am. A free agent kicker, had to choose between New England, Pittsburgh, and Detroit. And ultimately, I picked New England because I thought that I could go up there and learn a lot from those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also coming off a Super Bowl. So if any team is going to look to pick players off of a roster, it's going to be from that roster, right?
Sure, sure.
And I always wanted to kick against the best, and I thought Adam Vinatieri could give me things. And I got lucky because I had Brad Seeley, who's one of the best special teams coaches in the National Football League.
He's a beast.
And he had changed me from a three-step to a two-step kicker. I had Josh Miller and Lonnie Paxton, three unbelievable pros that took me under their wings. The worst part about it is I had to make cookies every night. And take cookies and milk. Yeah, and training camp.
Tell
you know
me
how
about
rookies
that.
Get treated, right? So every night I had to take these guys cookies and milk up to their room when we got back from practice. So that was kind of my – they were great. You never had to pay for anything. You didn't have to do anything
right.
over the top. You just had to make them cookies. So I befriended the people at the hotel, and they always had my cookies ready so I could take them up to them at night. But I think the unique part about being a place kicker is that there's only really three or four positions open every year.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's more. But, you know, you just have to wait for your opportunity and take advantage of that opportunity.
So you started off in New England, and then didn't you go to the Ravens before you got to Chicago?
Yeah, so I went to Baltimore on the practice squad. I was supposed to be the kickoff specialist there. 3 weeks after I got there, I got cut, and I went back to home. I was 3.5 hours away, and I just remember I would go get up in the morning, go work construction, and then go kick and work out afterwards and just kind of repeat. I was working on a Friday at the construction, who's a really M&R Construction, is a close family friend of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin Wilkie from the Bears, who was Jerry Angelo's assistant, kept calling. I just kept hanging up on her mouth. I was like, yeah, whatever. I thought it was my friends. I was like, forget this. Yeah, and kept hanging up. And sure enough, it was the Bears that wanted me to come out and try out. So I literally hopped on a plane on like Thursday night, I think. I tried out on Friday, and Friday afternoon I was buying a suit. I'll never forget it. So the Chicago Bears, they always travel by a suit. I didn't bring anything with me other than just like, okay, weekend clothes, whatever.
Right.
They're like, well, you're going to need a suit. I'm like, all right, whatever. Let's go to the closest shop and get one. So I'm going through and picking out this suit. And next thing you know, the guy's like, that's going to be $2,500. I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I haven't plugged in a paycheck
yet.
Yeah,
like,
oh,
I have no money. I have no money.
I'm like, let's go on the other end of this. Let's make it just no stripes. Let's make it just black. Give me some nice shoes.
Thanks. Basic.
Yeah, and it's funny is I ended up playing my first ever career game in your hometown in Cleveland.
Wow.
And that's where I got
That's
my
my
start.
brownies. That's my brownies.
So Cleveland has a special place in my heart.
It's not easy to kick in places like Chicago, places like Cleveland. I mean, like, when you got the call from Chicago and you got there, did it ever go through your mind, like, whoa, this is going to be like Soldier Field and kicking down there? And I mean, it's not like being like in a dome or something like that.
You know what's funny is I didn't even think about it. When I got the job, I was just happy to have it, to be able to play. That's all I wanted was an opportunity. And I remember I was 3 for 6. We were in down playing at LSU Stadium against the Saints because it was during the hurricane and they had to relocate between there and the Alamo Dome. And I hit a 29-yard field goal and I celebrated like I hit a 54-yard field goal. But it was my first ever game winner. And that was kind of when it clicked for me. I was like, you know what? I can do this. And then Patrick Manley and Brad Maynard and Dave Tobe and Kevin O'Day and Chris Tabor, all these guys have been lucky enough to be around to just say, hey, take it one kick at a time. And because we always kicked outside with Lovey, kicking at Soldier Field was like a walk in the park. So I had already had kicked in snowstorms and rain. Like Lovey was like, it's bear weather. And that was our advantage. So I always said to myself, if I can kick in Chicago, I can truly kick anywhere. And kicking in places like Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, yeah, they're extremely tough, but it's all a mentality. Like, how do you take it? Like, I could sit here and be like, oh man, I'm kicking in San Francisco. It's crazy windy. Well, I could do that and lose a job, or I could say, hey, let's go do this better than anybody else and just have fun doing it.
What was it like, man, being in Chicago all those years, and then next thing you know, you're out in San Fran? I mean, you're a PA guy, you're in Chicago. Now you're out on the West Coast. I mean, what was that transition like?
It's like a coach. I've been really up until that point, I've been really lucky. I played in one organization for 11 years. I'd met my wife. I started having a family. All my roots were here. I was the all-time leading scorer for the Bears. I figured that I have the ability that I could play here for a couple more years, maybe, and finish my career as a Bear. But I didn't get that opportunity. And I think for me, it was a wake-up call, and it was great because I got a chance to refocus on myself. As opposed to worrying about, new coaches coming and going, who's my coordinator going to be, what's going to happen. And, for me, it was great because I got a chance to really focus on what I thought I got away from the last couple of years in Chicago. I love it here. Chicago's obviously, my home. It's a very tough city for me to leave. But for me, I was able to play for the Giants for a year, which was incredible. And the Mara family was. And everybody in the organization was absolutely amazing. And we went to the playoffs, we lost to the Packers. And then I come out to San Francisco and I was able to play with people I knew. I played with John Lynch in a Pro Bowl in 06. I had met Kyle through the NFLPA going to the combine, right? So I'd had some familiarity. Stan Kwan was the first guy to ever work me out. So I was really excited about getting started in San Francisco because I thought it was a new start, warm weather. The travel for me and my family was difficult because they have stayed in Chicago. But like coaches, you don't complain about it. This is what you do. You're lucky enough to do it, and you got to make decisions that make sense for not only you, but your family. But I've loved it. I mean, I've had a chance to watch how a rebuild works, and we played in the Super Bowl. Obviously, we were on the wrong end of it, but it was pretty unique to be a part of something for 3 years that you put so much work into.
That was a great Super Bowl. What is it like? You kicked in multiple Super Bowls. So is there a difference like kicking in a preseason game versus a regular season game, playoffs, and then a Super Bowl? Like, is there a do you give it a little extra oomph, or you like what's that dynamic like?
For me, I've always treated every game the same. And I always thought that if I kicked really well in preseason, that's going to give me the confidence I needed to kick off the season the right way. And I always wanted to start fast because I figured if I could start fast in Chicago, that's the best weather you're going to kick in for the first 5 or 6 weeks. And then you could afford to maybe miss one or two down the stretch to have a chance to make the Pro Bowl, right? And I think that was kind of my secret to success here. And sometimes the Pro Bowl I don't get too geeked up about because it's sometimes a popularity contest of whose team's winning, and it's fans are voting, and I love that the fans can do that. But for me, I think what's unique about being a kicker is if you didn't live in the moment, the moment was going to pass you by.
Sure.
You know, as a head coach, you know, like special teams are a huge part of the game. Like
huge.
You're one kick away, you're one punt away, you're one special teams tackle away from either being in the Rose Bowl or being at the Tax Slayer Bowl or being in the different bowl game, right? And that's what I'm talking about. It's like being in the moment. It's coaching in the moment. It's enjoying the moment. And I always love the game winners. My wife doesn't, but I do. I love it.
You know, I'm gonna ask you a question, and you can say, like, in general philosophy or what other guys, you know, you don't have to answer, like, for yourself. But it was, like, years ago, I was at a clinic at Youngstown State, a football clinic, and Jeff Wilkins was there. And, you know, obviously he kicked a long time in the league. And we asked him the question about icing a kicker. And I said, you don't have to answer.
I'll answer it. It's funny is I have a secret. So, it's hard for me because I love the fact that a timeout gets called. Love it.
He said that it's stupid for coaches to ice the kicker because I get more time to get my spot. You know, depending on the field, condition of weather. I mean, it's like I get more time to get lined up, to evaluate the situation, check the wind and all that. If you don't ice me, I just got to run out there. We got to get the spot. We got to boom, kick. He said he loves it when coaches ice the kicker.
Yeah, I love the timeout, truthfully. I think it's one of the best things you can ever do, especially a veteran kicker, because it gives them more time, like he said. But you know what's unique to me, Mel, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about this too, is, you know, we have going into games, I'll always scout the punter, our kicker, the opposing kicker, punter will do the punter and the snapper, whatever. And we'll try to come up with game plans around what everybody sees to kind of help the coaches kind of, hey, this is what I see in technique. You know, I'll always try to go back and watch their game winners and find out now whether they'll call a timeout or they should call a timeout based on the results, but also when to call the timeout, right? Like, you don't call the timeout when I'm already set, you can snap the ball. You call it, if you're going to call it for the O-lineman and get the defensive line ready, you call it when I'm one step back. I haven't even looked up at the stadium yet, right?
Yeah.
Because you're giving me all that time. So
sure.
I love when they do it. I think I can do a lot of things that would help me make the kick. But there's nothing like making a game-winning field goal. I love it. I absolutely love it.
How many game winners have you hit, do you think?
I think 16.
16 game winners.
Yeah, I think so.
Is there one that sticks out more than the others?
You know, the one kick that I remember that kind of propelled my career was we were playing the Seattle Seahawks. Lance Briggs had made a huge stop at the 50-yard line. Huge play. Just jumping through, fourth and one. The offense gets the ball back. They did a great job running the football for a few plays, and then they made this seam pass to Rashid Davis, another undrafted free agent. A couple plays later, they get us into field goal range, and we hit a 49-yard game-winning field goal. And probably my favorite end of Soldier Field. I love kicking that right-to-left ball in the south end zone. So that one for me was really, you know, one that I'll always remember. And then I think the other two that stick out to me is the Saints game this year. I know it was like a 33, 31-yard field goal. But that was such a back-and-forth game, and we needed that for seeding and placement. And that was the first probably game, next to maybe Seattle, that it was truly a playoff atmosphere. And you know how it is in both Seattle and Orange. Those places are rowdy, right?
It's loud, man. Loud.
Yeah, loud, loud. And then I'll go back to the Tennessee game my first year in San Francisco. I had six field goals. The offense went up and down the field, trading points. Jimmy G came up to me and was like, hey, Robbie, where do we need to get this to give it a shot? And it was kind of cool because I saw some of that New England flash, you know, that just, hey, what do we got to do? Let me go through the playbook.
Right.
And he was able to get us in range. And, you know, we hit a 45-yard winner to win it at home. And I think we won like five or six games towards the end of the season after starting 1-10 or something like that. And that's kind of unheard of to finish 6-10. So
yeah,
it was great to get him. And obviously it's fun to always win those games. I mean, that's what you want to do. You play to win the game, right? As Herm Edwards would say, you play to win the game.
Hey, on the other side of that, you know, obviously you're not going to make every kick, right? So have you missed some game winners?
Yeah, you know, there's a few I've missed. Minnesota, for some reason, has always been a place that's kind of had my number. I had my first child, Griffin. I was up all night. My wife was in labor delivering. We delivered at 1:30 in the morning. I got in at like 5:30 into Minnesota, and I had a great first half. And then we tried a 66-yard field goal at the end of the
What year was
game.
this?
I think this was the last year you were in
Was this 14?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was the last year in Chicago. And
I
then we kicked the
remember
game winner on second down. And I always just got upset because I missed two kicks that I could have made to help win the team. So, like, for me, I was there for my wife and my son, right? And I was so exhausted. You never forget the firstborn. Like,
I remember that, man. I remember that.
I got to hold him for 5 minutes, and then I went and played a game. And the thing that hurt me the most was that I've always been really good at balancing my life. And I just knew that in that moment, I had let the team down when they needed me the most. And that kills me. That crushes me.
Sure.
But I'll always remember that kick because, you know, my son, here he is. Dad has a chance to be a hero up all night. And, you know, I just pushed the ball wide right.
There's a story behind that story on that kick too. So I feel you on that. You know, it wasn't until I got to the NFL that I kind of understood that, you know, like if you ask a guy to go out and attempt a kick, obviously he's going to say I can make it. But like you said, you know, the margins are so slim for kickers. If I send you out to hit a 60 yarder, there's a good chance you're not going to make it. But if you say you can make it, we'll try it. You know, how does that affect your overall stats in terms of, you know, because you can't miss very many in that league and keep a job.
Yeah, I think I've never really looked at stats as being like, oh my God, I missed, right? I've always
Right.
looked at stats as being like the ultimate deter. Like, I'll use this season for example. I missed the most kicks I've ever missed in a season. We had four long snappers at a rookie holder, and that's not an excuse, right?
Sure,
It just
sure.
isn't. But, you know, when you have that consistency and you have those two guys that you've worked with for a really long time, the transition to San Francisco was extremely easy.
Yeah.
So, like, I go back to this year and say, okay, hey, what did I do great? What did I do wrong? What could I do better? And in the beginning of the season, I didn't do a very good job of my rhythm and tempo, and I was missing more kicks. So then I got hurt because I was overworking. I was trying to fix it. I was trying to make up for lost time of what happened in
Sure.
the offseason with the contract.
Yeah.
And then I turn around and I just wasn't smart. I mean, that was just an error of judgment on my part. And then I finished the season 16 for 17. And went on a nice streak, and the three of us started to get in that rhythm. And it takes probably 3 weeks for a new unit to really click and
Yeah.
have that confidence. But you know, you're gonna miss kicks. I think a big part of what happens is you just got to be honest about who you are and what
Yeah.
you can do, right? I
Sure.
mean, if I can't make a 60-yard field goal, I'm not gonna tell my coach, "Hey, I can go make this," and then it's 5 yards short. He's gonna look at me like, "I could have thrown a Hail Mary, you know? I could have done something different." I'm like, "Yeah, I know. Trust me." So I think a big part of it is just trust between you and the player and the player and the coach.
At some point, you were nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year award, weren't you?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
What's it like to even be considered? I mean, because I remember when Peanut won it,
Yep.
and like that's one of the most prestigious awards you can get in the league. What's it like to be nominated for something like that? I mean, that's pretty damn good.
You know, I was always raised to give back and help others because I never got to where I was at today because I did it on my own.
Right.
No matter if it was the NFL, no matter if it was college, no matter if it was high school, you know, I grew up playing every sport you could possibly think of. And I was always involved in the community, giving back. And I think for me, there were two moments with Walter Payton that will always stick out in my mind. When you walk in the Bears facility, in the indoor facility, there's basically like a whole shrine to Walter Payton because it's the Walter Payton Center. And I'll always remember him running with the kids on Lakeshore and just watching the things that he had done as an athlete that he used his platform for. And I think the things that got me excited was you never do charity work and you never give back to get an award. You just never, you know, I've never done it for that. I've always done it to give other people an opportunity and or give them a moment where they're not worried about something they're going through, right? So for me to have the ability for the San Francisco 49ers to nominate me as their player for the Walter Payton Man of the Year, meant a lot to me, not only to be nominated, but to also be in the category of Walter Payton, right? Like, I'll never forget when I scored the points to overtake him in scoring as a Bear. And then he was third at the time because Kevin Butler was one. And I was like, oh my, did that, Walter Payton? Walter Payton, like the greatest Bear probably of all time.
Of all time.
To me, that those are moments that are special to me because it takes 11 dudes to do it, right? It doesn't take like, oh, Robbie's the only guy scoring points. It takes a defense to make a stop. It takes the punt return unit to get in range or the offense to drive the whole way down.
That's right.
Really, I only get a chance to play if it's fourth and long or fourth and short and, you know, we have a better chance of making the points depending on the game. So for me, I always appreciated those guys because I know when those offensive linemen come off the field, they're gassed, you know. And
totally gassed.
Yeah, and I think the other unique part about a field goal unit in the NFL is that you only have 53 players and only 47 dress.
Right.
So some of your star players on offense and defense on both lines are participating.
Right.
And I know how much it meant to them for us to win, but I also know how much it meant for them to be a part of those units, and it takes a lot of pride to be a part of that. And I'll appreciate every single guy for all 15 years, coaches, players, because I knew it was more than just that unit.
15 years in the league. You know, you come in, undrafted rookie, you make it through, you kick in the Super Bowls, but at the same time, you get married, you got a family now, you got the kids. Like, what is your proudest moment, like, as a father? You know, at to this point, do you think?
You know, there's so many, but there's really two stories that stick out. The first one I'll start with is we talked about the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That is the most relaxed I'd have ever been for a football game. And
really?
For some reason, when my kids come to the game, my wife comes, it's always a game-winning field goal. They went to New Orleans. I kicked the game winner. They came out to San Francisco this past year for the LA Rams game. We kicked a game-winning field goal. So for me, on the Super Bowl Sunday, I spent most of my time, because we didn't have meetings, I spent most of my time in my family's room, just playing catch with my kids, doing homework with my kids to catch up from the school that they missed. And that really put me at ease because I just knew that no matter what happens, I still have to go home and be a dad, right?
Right, that's right.
Of the trips, my wife brought the kids out to come see me, and my wife texted me. She's like, hey, the pilots just asked, what are you guys doing in San Francisco? Like, they're like, yeah, we're going to see my dad. And they're like, well, what does your dad do? They're like, he's just dad. He does nothing. So, I think being able to share those moments with a 6'4" and 1.5-year-old,
yeah,
you know, something we've always done as a family is we've always taken a picture on the very first game of the home game of the season, and we'll always take one at training camp. So I have pictures of my kids growing up, and when I'm done playing football, it's going to be so cool. And I'm sure the same for you, you know, your kids come out to practice or being ball boys. Or they're Speaking of which, I have a bone to pick.
What's up?
I can't do this during the season, but all alumni can come back and blow the whistle.
Come on, man. Come on.
I love it.
The Spartan dogs, man, they can come back. They come to practice. If they want to blow the whistle, they have the whistle. Hey, run practice. Get them going.
Whatever it takes. I might just come to spring ball just to do it, just to say I was a coach for the day or something.
Come
do
on,
an
man.
Internship.
Hey, you're always welcome, man. You're always one of my guys. I think it's important, man, and I know it's important to connect with the former players. You know, you played a great place, and whether it's NFL or college ball, like, the tie, the relationships that you have with your former players, it's invaluable, man. That's what the program is all about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of unique because everywhere I've been, they have really strong alumni bases. You know, Penn State has a huge alumni base. The Bears, the Giants, the 49ers, they all have and welcome their guys back. I mean, when we were in New York, we had old Super Bowl guys that would come in and, you know, say what's up before the game, and they would come through the locker room on Saturday mornings, and you know, same thing in Chicago and in San Francisco. But I think there's a lot to the history of football, and I could always resonate with those that came before me and those that'll come after me. Right. So,
yeah,
yeah. I saw that. I was so excited. I'm like, I'm going to go coach. I got to go. I'm not even an alum, but I might have to start doing grad school there or something.
Yeah, man. Hey, everyone's welcome. Are you going to pass along the kicking trade to your kids? Are you going to teach them how to kick and say, hey, listen, you can make a lot of money doing this?
You know, it's funny. I don't care. I don't want my kids to live in my shadow. I don't want them to have to be like dad. I want them to kind of pave their own path. You know, I'm doing some stuff out here because of the quarantine and the stay at home. I bought like a little Franklin Sports uprights that I could use for like a narrow target practice. And they'll go out and they'll shag balls for me. They'll kick for me. And then they'll be like, hey, dad, I want to kick. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's do that. They'll play baseball. They'll play soccer. I mean, you know, whatever they want to do, it's completely up to them. I'm not going to force them in any direction, but eventually they'll find a passion. And yeah. The only passion I truly hope they find is golf. That's one of my like diehard, like get away from golf. So
I was going to ask you about golf. How is your golf game right about now?
Non-existent. Non-existent. Yeah. You know, it's been unique. You know, everyone's going through this time where their kids are home and they're doing online schooling. And my two oldest, they just finished school on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, I got to work out in the morning. I have my Zoom meetings in between there. And when I got done, like, I didn't want to be like, hey, honey, I'm going to go play 18 holes when I knew that both kids have to do schooling. I haven't had a chance to play a whole heck of a lot, and, you know, it's something I love to do. So I got the kids, their clubs are playing out in the front yard, and they're smacking balls all over the place.
Right.
I'm sure we're going to have to replace some of these windows in the next few years. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt about it. Hey, did you see that Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tiger field deal last weekend? Did you see
How
that?
Good was that?
Do you think you could beat Tom Brady on the course? I mean, can you get after him out there or what?
Yeah, it would be a fun match, that's for sure. You know, what was really cool about that, Mel, is that I thought that was one of the most unique settings in any sports venue. You had two guys in golf, and you have two guys in football who are absolute rivals.
Absolute.
Absolute rivals. And you know what? It started off a little shaky as Phil and Tom got down. But then you saw Tom got mad whenever – Barkley started chirping at him, and he hits the shot from the fairway in the hole. And next thing you know, they make a charge. And Tom, you know, I thought it was really unique to be able to hear them all talk amongst each other. That was one of the best golf matches I've ever watched.
You kind of knew that was going to happen, right? You kind of knew that, you know, Chuck was talking trash. You knew that Tom, because he's Tom, you know he was going to do something. I wasn't surprised when he did that.
So there wasn't many times where I'm not jealous of people golfing, right? I mean, in that pouring down rain during that time, I get upset I have to play football in it, let alone go golfing. And so to see how Tom started his round, I think there was a quote in there from somebody that said, Tom's too busy winning Super Bowls than his golf game. Yeah, he's been to, I think, 10 Super Bowls, which is basically half his career. I mean, that's insane. So, but I thought it was really cool to see how – even Tom would chirp to Peyton about, hey, the only man that could get to me was your brother kind of thing. So it was really cool. Or like, hey, Eli only shows up in the fourth quarter. So I thought it was really cool to see those guys all interact with each other.
Yeah, I thought it was cool too. I checked you out on, I think it was Twitter. You had like a Donut Saturday deal or something.
Oh, Mel, my kids.
Tell me what's going on with what is that? Like, what is it?
So in our household, Pizza Friday and Donut Saturdays are like a go-to. So we try to find different pizza shops around the area. And, you know, you can do pizza anywhere. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
We don't have to cook. We don't have to clean up. It's literally like pizza, salad, close up the box, throw it away, and no big deal. Donut Saturday, my kids love donuts. I'm a diehard chocolate frosted donut guy. So we used to just go to like Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, or Stan's Donuts here in Chicago. And I said, let's hop in the car. We haven't been out of the house in a long time. So we started driving like 30, 35 minutes to go get donuts. We'd eat them in the car, and it kind of became a family ritual. So the Gold household is stacked with pizza on Friday if anybody wants to come over, and we got awesome donuts on Saturday morning.
That's sweet, man. That's priceless. So your favorite donut is what?
Chocolate frosting.
Chocolate frosting. See, for me, like, I love donuts, but, like, if I eat, like, one donut, 5 pounds right there.
Well, that's why that Letterman jacket behind you can't fit. You got to get away from the donut smell.
Got to push the donuts away.
You can't participate in that Saturday morning ritual.
I cannot do that. Not at this point. Hey, so tell me what else you got going on outside of ball, man. You got this kicking it with Robbie deal. Like, what all you? I know you always have, you know, some things going. So tell me about what you got going on.
Yeah, so the first thing is I started my own company. It's called Eventify. We have an event software management company. So we have a system that basically runs any type of events, from business to business to charity events to buddies golf or, you know, pub crawls or anything like that. So I've been busy doing that. And then I started, one thing I wanted to do when I came out of this quarantine is I wanted to come out of it with one, I'll call it quality, that I didn't have before it started. We've been in this for 3 months now. So yeah. I decided to start this web series called Kicking It with Robbie and start talking. We'll have you on, Mel. That'd be great. I'd love to have you. You'd be a perfect guest for it. You know, we talk about success and motivation. We talk about, like, for you, it'd be great to talk about communication and how it is to, you know, it's something that always resonated with me when you were a coach is that you treated me, even though I was 33 years old, like I was one of your own, right? And I think that's what's unique about in the position you are now. So to be able to have people tell their stories and understand that, you know, there's highs and lows and how they got to where they are with help. I mean, you got a really cool story. That would be a lot of fun. We would talk about, you know, Trestle, Saban, Barry Alvarez. We can talk about recruiting, not like who you're going to recruit or anything
like
that.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know you have a lot of cool stories about going into houses. You've coached with some amazing people. And it's fun for people just to kind of hear those stories.
Yeah, well, that's great, man. Well, yeah, I'll be happy to come on. Anytime you want me to come on, I'm there, bro. And, man, I really appreciate you coming on with me tonight, man. I know last week we tried to get it going, and I had, like, a little Wi-Fi issue, but everything is perfect. I appreciate you taking the time. One of my favorite guys of all time. I mean, I really just cherish our relationship and our friendship, and it's going to continue to grow. I'm pulling for you, bro. How many more years you got left out in that league, man?
I have a few. You know, it's kind of unique because I'm at an age where, I want to get 400 field goals and 2,000 points. I think that'd be kind of unique to do. But I also know that I want to be a father and a husband. And I think those are things I want to watch my kids grow up. I want to coach their sports. I want to be involved. So I'm going to play until the leg falls off, or, you know, either side says I can't do it, or my wife and my kids say, hey, dad, like, you know, it's time for you to be home. So I want to win a Super Bowl. I think that's a big goal of mine. And I'm not going to stop until they tell me no, basically. So we'll see what happens. But I appreciate you having me on, Mel. You know, it's always great to talk to you. And anything you ever need, I'm here for you. Tell your kickers to reach out to me, your special teams coach.
Appreciate that.
Love to help them out. So anything you need from me, just let me know.
I appreciate that, bro. Hey, man, thanks for coming on, man. I'll talk to you real soon.
All right, buddy. Be good. Okay. Take it easy on my Nittany Lions, would you?
I can't make any promises.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and joining Robbie and I. Remember to be safe out there and go green.
Thanks for listening to Tucker Talks. Like this podcast? Don't forget to share it, subscribe to it, and follow Coach Tucker on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Coach_M. Tucker. And remember, when it comes to your dreams, only labels have limits. What you can accomplish is limitless when you're relentless.